our legal structure or economic. Carry your phone, I thought it was dramatic. Okay. That we are being judged, like our legal, our jurisprudence is being judged by Western standards, in the sense that if this thing does not conform to their standard, it is rubbish. And we could see that from the validity test that was introduced by the colonialists, that subjected our customary laws to this validity test. And these validity tests, we see that they are tests that conform with their own laws. So if any of our customary law does not conform with their own law, does not pass the validity test, that customary law is deemed as primitive by them. And these are things we want to examine, that there is a reason or philosophy behind what our customary laws. We don't just have customary laws for just any sake. There are reasons behind them, and we'll be examining these things. So basically, I'll be examining the fact that there's a mythic representations of Africans. Mythic, that's myth. Mythic representation of Africans, and that. Okay, sorry. In answering this question, now I want to be practical. In answering these questions, I want us to look at three things that we mentioned. Any question of African jurisprudence? Basically, you know that when they ask us questions of African jurisprudence, it's just basically the whole thing. So we talk about the diverse myths of African jurisprudence. That is, what are those wrong perceptions that they have about African jurisprudence? The diverse myths, one. The secondly, we talk about why African philosophy is considered as a myth. That is, why do they have these wrong perceptions of African jurisprudence? Then thirdly, we talk about the future of African jurisprudence, that going forward, what is the way forward or whatever. So, starting from the first part of our answer, or how we answer it, the diverse myths of African jurisprudence, what are those wrong perceptions? Firstly, there are eight, according to the article that we have, there are eight. Yes, there are eight myths. Don't worry, they are not so hard. So, firstly, we have, the first myth is, Africans do not have a history or past. That is, they believe we don't have a history or past. So, there is a myth that we do not have a history or past, and that what we consider as a history is part of the history of Europeans in Africa. To Europeans, our history started from when they had interaction with us. That is where our own history started from, which is wrong. We've had history way, many centuries before we met or interacted with Europeans. So, a particular American Navy commander said that Africans have played no significant roles except to be criminals. Yes, they said except to be primitive, except to be savages. We've not played any role in anything. We don't have history. We are just there. So, however, all these are false. This myth is false. Why is it false? Number one, reference will be made to the civilization of Egypt. That we can see that Europe and Africans had history. When we make reference to the civilization of Egypt, that is, Egypt had ancient great empires. We had the great pharaohs. We had the hieroglyphic writings that talk about the history of the Egyptians. We had various structures, the pyramids of Giza, the mummies, the pharaohs that were buried, and all of these things that show that we had an history before the coming of the Europeans. And these are then, so this is one way to refute that particular myth. Now, another scholar is now saying that when they are saying Africa has no history, they are referring to black people like us, sub-Saharan Africans, that they admit that they know of Egypt. Egypt is civilized and well-developed, but we the blacks, sub-Saharan Africa, we are not. Yes, the sub-Saharan Africa. So the particular scholar is now refuting, Yes, under that particular myth that we don't have a history. Yes, it's an article that was sent. Yes. Someone will resend it. Ask someone to resend it. So, the arguments have now refuted this claim that It's not only Egypt that was civilized, that we had other ancient civilizations. That, for example, research showed that other parts of Africa had languages that were similar to Egypt. We had customs that were similar to Egypt. So you cannot say that we are not as civilized as they were. They make reference to the great ancient empires, the Sumer, the Songhai Empire, the Mali Empire, and all these civilizations that we had a history before you guys came on board. So that is history, myth one. Then the second myth is, Africans have little or no system of laws before the arrival of the Europeans. That is, it was when they came that they brought their own system of law, that we were just there. We had no system of law guiding our affairs. So I wrote that it's a stupid belief that our thoughts is not ruled by logic.
Yes. And that's what she wants, actually.
See, if you want to pass that, just remaining courses or just
okay, so the second point is Africans have little or no system of laws before the Europeans came. Yes. So I said that it's a stupid belief. The second myth. Africans have little or no system of laws before the arrival of the Europeans. So it's a stupid belief. It's just what I've said. You can ask somebody. So it's a stupid belief that our thought is not ruled by logic. That we are only ruled by superstitious belief. That means we don't think logically. We don't arrive at a logical decision, conclusion. So that we don't think that we are only guided by mere superstition. And that our administration of justice is not with any rational thinking. Yes, that's what they said. That was not with any rational thinking. So, yes, that we don't have what you call law. What we have is custom. That we are just doing this because everybody's doing it. We don't say this is law, you must abide by it. That's what they disclaim. So we are saying that no, this is false. How is this false? Because our laws are separate from our morals. Our laws are separate from our morals. That means we have laws that are backed by sanctions, while morals are not backed by sanctions per se. So that's what makes it different from law and morals. So reference is made to Yoruba culture, the three wisdom in Yoruba, that is command. The three wisdom in Yoruba, command, ashe, culture, asha, and wisdom. Abi taboo, a war. So, I will come to English for those that don't understand. There are three wisdoms in Yoruba. like to back up the fact that our laws are separate from our morals. We are making reference to the Yoruba culture. The three wisdoms in Yoruba: command, ashe; culture, asha; taboo, a war. We have command, that is do this, don't do this. It's different from culture, that this is what everybody's doing, this is our way of life. They are expressly stated that you do this, if you kill, you will be killed. That is an express law. Then culture is different, like the way we dance, the way we sing, the way we mourn. Then we have taboo, a word, you must not do this. You must not sleep with your father's wife. You must not do, I don't know if any of that example per se, but you get. So it shows that our law is different from our morals. Then also, though our laws are unwritten, I said before, though our laws are unwritten, they carry sanctions. That is what makes it different from morals. You can use the idea of law and morality that we know before, that our laws carry sanctions. You give example, that in Yoruba land, if you kill, you'll be killed. That's a law that carries a sanction. Unlike morals, that Maybe if you do not respect your elder one, they will not say they should, you should be in prison. You understand? That's immoral for you not to respect an elder. So that makes it different. Issue of sanctions. So on the third meet, we have, they believe there's a wrong perception that African jurisprudence meets as in M-Y-T-H-S. Myth. M-Y-T-H-S. So the third myth is African jurisprudence has no respect for individual rights. There is an erroneous belief that African law centers on communalism and not individualism. Yes, they believe that our jurisprudence does not recognize individuals' rights. So it is erroneous to believe that African law centers on communalism and not individualism. Though, to some extent, our laws focus on communalism in the sense that we tend to encourage communal behavior, that love your neighbor as yourself. You understand? Do not harm your neighbor. Communal thing. We do things communally. However, it doesn't mean we don't recognize individuals' rights. We don't say you as a person, you have your own rights. Of course we do. We recognize individuals' rights. There's a wide recognition and protection of individuals' rights and obligation. For example, an individual has a right to life, right? And it is protected by the law, by our ancient laws, that if you kill, you should not kill, and if you kill, you'll be killed. And an individual has a right to personal liberty. He has a right to own property. If you steal another person's property, you'll be sanctioned. So that shows that we recognize, and not just recognition, we also protect individuals' rights. It's not just communal.
Sorry, then, the comment was said on property now. There's a proverb that says, Oko, he gets Saba, Oko, and Oko, and Oko, and
Oko. Hey, saw that there, saw that there.
Is
what he's saying is that there is demand. He say Oko kinjeki si baba kagbe fun omo abi, something like that. So that means that no, like it basically.
That is the father beyond the father and son has his boundary of limitation.
Exactly.
The son has his own
rights. The father too has his own rights, hence individualism. Thank you, Bola. So we have our rights. We recognize and protect individual rights. So then the fourth myth is African jurisprudence is positive, not negative. That means there's a wrong belief that African jurisprudence is positive, not negative. That is, they believe that we just want to achieve social equilibrium, maintain peace and order, but not to punish offenders. Then we just want to say, don't kill, don't steal, don't sleep with another person's wife. That we only have that, but we don't even have punishment that if you kill, you'll be killed. That's a wrong perception. So we are not saying that this is wrong because we actually have sanctions to enforce the laws, the positive laws. That when we say do this, we also have laws that say don't do this. If you do it, you will be punished.
So you got the point.
The point is that we are saying that we have just
Yes. So, Western philosophy sees punishment in the light of individual. That means Western philosophy, that means just like our criminal law, it sees punishment in the light of an individual. That is personal liability. That you are the one who offended, so you are the one that should be punished. But African laws, though, it also sees personal liability, but it at times extends it to the family. That's secondary liability. In the sense that Omani Omonti won bako, oh, it tarnish the image of the family in a way. Do you get what I'm saying? Mashe me, you're not probably omo you ban. Like A child who does bad in the outside, it sort of brings a stain to the family's name, something like that. So in the sense that there is also so what is it? Okay, so we are saying that not only do we have personal liability like Western philosophy has in criminal law, we also have we are saying that we also extend liability to the family as well, in the sense that the family would be shamed that you people did not train your child well or something like that. So yes, and the former family to also suffer the shame. Yes,
so the punishment is both individual and communal, like the family or the clan suffering.
So we mentioned different sanctions in Yoruba land to show that we have sanctions like flogging, banishment, imprisonment. So there is also a Yoruba adage that says Ikatoba Shelobange. So it is he who offends that will be punished. So this also applies to that individual right. The myth that I mentioned before that they said we don't recognize individual rights. So the fifth myth. Yes. So the basis of obligation, the fifth myth is the basis of obligation in African jurisprudence is belief in or fear of supernatural powers. So they believe that. So there is this erroneous belief that the reason why we obey laws is because we fear supernatural powers. We fear our yami. We fear our irumole. You understand that is the only reason why we obey laws, because we have the fear of them. So it's an erroneous belief. And we are saying that this is wrong. The reason why they believe that we obey laws because of our fear of supernatural belief is because they believe we are incurably religious. That we are too superstitious. That our superstitious beliefs is what makes us to obey laws. Because we believe that if I don't obey laws, some irumole will come and carry me, or they will do something to me. So the response to this particular myth is that truly, to some extent, people obey laws because of the fear supernatural powers, you understand? They fear supernatural repercussions that truly to some extent, but it is only restricted to religion and maybe sacred rituals, that we only fear people, we only obey rules then based on religious beliefs. That if they say in our family we have oro that we carry, you understand? That if you don't do that oro, if you don't do that ritual, your child will die. Or that child, if you don't do ritual for that child will die or will become somebody useless in life, you understand? So there will now be, because of that rule or that law in that family, everybody will want to obey that law, that every child that they give birth to, they must go through, that child must go through that ritual. So that belief or that obligation to follow that rule is based on supernatural belief. So, but then this is limited to only religion. For laws that are not religious in any way, for example, what law is not religious in any way? That is not based on religion, African religion. That's what I'm saying.
What I'm sharing.
Sharing of property. There is no, it's not tied to any religious belief. It's just based on, okay, digi or ori ojori, whatever one you want to adopt there. So you're obeying that particular law. It's not because you fear repercussion from Irumole. You only obey it because you have the will in you to obey. You have the belief that you need to obey the laws of your land. It's not based on any superstitious belief. Thank you very much for that example. So then the sixth myth is, there is no such thing as the unity of African law. Unity of African law. That is, African laws are not the same, or they are not, there is no similarity. There is a wrong perception like that. So this scholar is now saying that no, that a study of all African societies, you see that there are similarities in our laws. There is homogeneity to some extent in our laws. That basically everywhere in most African societies, you must not kill, you must not steal. Then there is issue of respect, you must respect your elders. You understand? We see that most of these things apply to most of African societies. So that means there is a unity in African laws. We are not just doing our own thing based on what we feel like anyhow. We are not, how would I say it? We are not in discordance, or we are not disorganized. We are sort of organized in our beliefs. We are sort of unified in our beliefs, in what we do. So the seventh myth is that the political or institutional basis of African law is non-democratic. That is, they believe that our traditional institutions, our traditional political institutions are autocratic. For example, the system of monarchy, the system of monarchy in Africa, that they believe that a king in Africa is autocratic, is a law unto himself, is accountable to no one, is subject to no one, he can do as he wishes, he can do whatever he likes, and even if the people do not want it, he does whatever he likes. His words are laws. That is an erroneous belief. So the argument against it is that it is not so, that even where we have monarchy system, even where we...
Like the point that you are...
Okay. The political or institutional basis of African law is non-democratic. Is non-democratic. So there is this belief that our monarchy system is autocratic, the king does as he wishes, even though the people do not support it. So the scholar is now saying that no, it is not so, that there are some democratic systems adopted in African political institutions. Firstly, truly we have a king that is monarch, that is a monarch, is sovereign. We call him Ikeji Orisha, Igbakeji Orisha. Igbakeji Orisha, and all of those things, that is a demigod. But despite this, the king is not a law unto himself, because if he does not do the wishes of the people, he can be removed. For example, the Yoruba culture, Yoruba is against a despotic ruler. If a king is being despotic or being autocratic, they will look for a way to remove him. They will tell him to open the calabash. Omashi Igbawo. And we know the meaning of open the calabash. That means to commit suicide. So, and this is done by the Ogoni court. The Ogoni courts are there to check, to serve as check and balances to the excess of a king. They check the excess of a king and they make sure that everything is balanced. Then, me personally, I wrote my own contribution to that article that we have the Igbo decentralized system, that there is a council of elders, there is the village assembly. So these are not autocratic. This shows democracy. Opinions, yes, democracy. Opinions of everyone in the village is sought through the representative of that family at the village assembly or at the council of elders. So in a way, it shows that political institution in Africa is not autocratic. It is democratic. So the eighth myth is, which is the last myth, is African jurisprudence has no literary or philosophical significance for general jurisprudence. I repeat, African jurisprudence has no literary or philosophical significance for general jurisprudence. That means, to the extent that, let me break it down. That means to the extent that everybody we want to adopt our thinking. That's what they are saying, that we are not so smart to the extent that other people, other societies, we want to adopt our thinking. So that's what that particular thing is saying, that they are not so smart, we are not so intellectually advanced that whatever we are doing, our laws will be attractive to them, that they will also want to adopt. You understand? That's the meaning. So we were saying that this is false. It is racially prejudicial. Racially is racism. Racially prejudicial. It is ignorant. It is ignorance, basically. So the argument against this myth is that there are evidences of our contribution to the development of general jurisprudence in the world today. For example, reference was made to Islamic law, that though Islamic law emanates from the Middle East, but it has been shown that Islamic law to some extent has major contributions. There are major contributions to Islamic law from Africa. There are some scholars in Africa that they made very good contributions to Islamic law that is now being practiced worldwide in Islam. He made an example of a particular Arab scholar, Ahmed Baba of Sudan. Ni mo rinu article ni mo ma ko. Okay, but he's popular here. Muslims, you know the man, you know the scholar. You know the scholar now. I need a response. You don't know him. Ahmed Baba of Sudan. That he made significant contributions to Islamic law that is being applied today. Then also, okay, personally, I wrote that. I don't know if it's of course, but you can agree, sir. I wrote that issue of reconciliation in ADR, that part of our laws ordinarily revolves around reconciliation. That even when someone commits an offense, the law still strives to reconcile the family, reconcile the families, the family of the offender and the family of the victim. That in this way, it has contributed to general jurisprudence. That's what everybody seems to be practicing these days. Everybody's bringing ADR. And according to Professor Akonbi, in one of his articles on ADR, he said that ADR as it is today is merely a repackaged form of what we've always been practicing. They think they came to introduce something new. It's a lie. They actually took it from us. They now repackaged it, they rebranded it, and introduced it to us, that we've always been practicing ADR, peaceful resolution, reconciliation, and all of that. It's part of our law. Eh? Mm-hmm.
And then they are still stealing credit.
Yes. From my knowledge of is that Africans have contributed to anthropology and political science, in the sense that look at the Egypt now. Egypt, how were Egyptians able to preserve their mummies? Is it not through chemicals? They knew that they had to remove the intestines of the, or the innards of the pharaohs to preserve them. They added some chemicals. So Westerners studied this, and they were able to, there are things that they are now using, and they studied this from our pharaohs, from the Egyptians, that these are things they are doing, you understand? So you cannot say we've not contributed to general jurisprudence, you get. By the way, Sha. So the second, necessary. So the second part of answering your question is, you've already treated the myths, you addressed the myth that okay, this is the myth, this is the wrong perception. These are arguments against the wrong perception, why it is a wrong perception. So you now go to factors responsible for the mythic representations of African jurisprudence. There are wrong perceptions that are imputed. Why? Why do they think this way of us? Firstly, ignorance about the ability of Africans to reason logically is in the material.
How many?
I have two.
Is this all four?
Okay, share the material. The material is just one. Okay, how many factors? It's just two. Two factors. 42.
41.
41. It's a disarrange. Yes. Is that from
you? That's why she's not even giving us the material.
Yes. By note. Seven. Alright, the first point, the first factor responsible for the wrong representation of African jurisprudence. Ignorance about the ability of Africans to reason logically. These people, they only came... Ignorance about the ability of Africans to reason logically. Hey, what are good about Russia? So ignorance about the ability of Africans to reason logically. These people, number one, I will break down that ignorance to like 5 seconds. Ignorance stems from fire, number one. All of the wrong perceptions they've made, they never decide to make research about these people's way of life.
Exactly.
It's not as if all their conclusions was not from maybe observation or empirical analysis or research about these people's way of life. They only came because they just came. Oh, these people are painting their faces. They must be stupid people. Then it's based on, like Bola said, supremacy. They believe that they are supremacists. Like their own culture is supreme. They are supreme species. You will see that from the word of one American Navy commander that Africans are just primitive beings with no brains of their own, no thinking. Yes, they said it that way. That
there's one that he said that if they clear out all the history, all black
history,
that what will be left
is that criminal. That all we just do is just anything they gather about us. We are just criminally minded.
What exists to them?
Yes, but this stems from the fact that most of them were colonialists. They were colonialists, so they had this supreme. They had this belief that they are supreme. Then secondly, in America, the blacks that were there were slaves. So they believe that because these people are slaves, they must be dumb. They don't know anything. We are the ones teaching them how to read and write. We are the ones clothing them. So that means they don't even have brains of their own. They don't have thinking of their own. They cannot reason logically. So ignorance. So the second point is absence of any written work of intellectual worth. I repeat. Absence of any written work of intellectual worth, like as in W-O-R-T-H. Yes. That means absence of any written work is share of intellectual words. That means that we did not record, there are no records of our intellectual thinking, of our reasoning. They are not written down. If the way we think, the reasons why we make decisions are actually documented, reference can be made to it and they will see that no, these people are smart. But most of our reasons are done through words of mouth. For example, if I say, for example, in the Bible, the King Solomon, where he made a decision between two women that were fighting over a baby, basically. So imagine. So now, how did Solomon arrive at the decision of who the real mother is? Solomon said, "Let us cut this baby into two. Since both of you are claiming the baby, let us cut this baby into two. Give you half-half." The real mother said, "Please, don't kill the baby. In fact, just give the baby to her." While the person who was not the mother that was lying was like, "Yes, cut the baby. Let us share it." Now, Solomon, from their reaction, Solomon was able to guess who the real mother is. That is, the real mother is the one who showed empathy, that didn't want the baby to die. So, you know, that is the reasoning. Behind that is judgment. But fortunately, it was recorded, so that's how we know. But unfortunately for us, most of our own reasonings were not recorded. So there was no way for them to look at the philosophy behind our laws. For example, that customary law on the fact that a woman who did not divorce her husband properly now went to marry another one and now gives birth, that child belongs to the former husband. Now, there is a reason, you know, in a particular case, Eddie versus Epstein, the court held that the British judge held that this customary law is repugnant to natural justice, equity, and good conscience. However, in a subsequent case, Ejano versus Okenome, the court held that do not let us do away with our culture just like that because of modern or based on Western standards. Now, the judge in that case was trying to talk about the fact that look at the reasoning behind this law first. That why did our cultural law say this? That there must be a reasoning behind it. It was not just made arbitrarily. So because you don't understand the reasoning behind it, you cannot say it is archaic or it is repugnant to natural justice.
What did you link that to?
I just linked it to evidence that the fact that we didn't record our reasoning. It didn't pay us. It's part of what is affecting us today. So I only made reference to that Solomon's decision, that because Solomon's decision was recorded, they could test to the fact that Israelites had brain. But our own too, we must have had reasons behind our own decisions. But because we didn't record them, they think we don't have brain or we don't have sense. So, way forward. Future of African jurisprudence.
Future.
I think just 2 reasons. Future of African philosophy of law. So this is the third aspect of African jurisprudence. This is the third aspect. So, firstly, many aspects of African jurisprudence are now being subject to modifications. That means they are being changed gradually due to modernism, due to urbanism. That's due to the fact that Igbalode Lawa, we are now in a civilized world. So some of our cultural laws, our traditional laws, are now changing gradually. For example, the killing of twins, you know, is a cultural belief, but it has been changing gradually. The fact that all children are from God, you cannot just kill them arbitrarily, just like that. So our views are changing. Then I think another thing that I thought of is this. It's not in the article, but I'm just thinking, Sha. Is that this issue of family compound? That I know ordinarily we live together in a family compound. Different small nuclear families, they live in a compound. That is what we call a family. But now it is sort of changing in the sense that there is more of nuclear family. Nuclear families are now living differently. We don't have those family compound thing again. You understand? You, your wife, and your children are now living separately from other extended members of the family. Unlike before, that everybody stays together. So, then, number two is, what should be done? There should be what should be done about African philosophy? How do we encourage or promote African jurisprudence? There should be an incorporation of the practical approach of African jurisprudence into our present legal system. That yes, we should not just always be differentiating customary laws from common law. Customary law, common law, customary law, common law. You understand? We should try to incorporate, since these are cultural customary laws that we are practicing, and we are also practicing common law, we should try to incorporate these together to form our own laws. So in that way, our African jurisprudence will remain there. They will not be neglected. So that is a futuristic something. So thank you very much. See, feminism, I've only read it once, so I don't know it very well.